Okay, if we can begin, we've had a series of meetings this morning. We've got two of the finance bills on the agenda. We're going to start with Senator Stumpf, Senate File 2095, the education bill. Senator Stumpf.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members. The E-12 education finance bill is one that we're dealing with, and I think what I'd like to do would be just to kind of give a somewhat of an overview first, and then I'll have Mr. Nauman go through the appropriation spreadsheet, and then maybe just comment a little bit on the levy tracking sheet, but that's primarily taxes, and I will be in the tax, or this bill will be in the tax committee tomorrow morning. The target that the E-12 education committee was given was $498 million, and I would just comment that the chairman requested each of the division chairs to submit a kind of a must-do list of requests for spending and a more elaborate list of what we'd like to spend. And the must-do list that was submitted from myself within consultation with a number of our committee members was about $950 some million. That was just the must-do list. The more elaborate list went over $1 billion, so it was like about $1.2 billion. I mention that because I think it gives a little bit of an insight into the needs in the education area, and the gives you some perspective of where the $498 million puts us. The we had two ways to look at addressing the spending, and with testimony in committee and lots of discussion, we chose to go and go after a debt that the state of Minnesota has, similar to the bill that we accumulated when we borrowed from the school districts by shifting some of that expenditure back onto the districts. At one point, we had borrowed over $1 billion from our school districts by delays in payments, by different mechanisms, and that occurred in the early 2000s. Primarily in 2001 or 2002. When we did that, we ignored a very important component of our education funding, which was special education. Special education at that time was actually, we kind of exacerbated the problem with special education because we took away the inflation factor or the part of that growth that we would normally fund each year. And so special education costs are ramping up. They average about 4 to 5% increase each year. So when we took away the inflation component, we really sent that part of our budget into orbit, so to speak. And consequently, right now, many of our, well, most of our school districts around the state are suffering a pretty severe financial crisis in what we call a cross-subsidy. And you've probably heard about the cross-subsidizing effect of special education. And districts across the state vary, but it ranges from $200 to close to $700 per pupil that the districts take out of their general fund to pay for special education. There is no choice for the district. Special education is a federally mandated program. It's backed up by the courts, and so the districts have no choice. So we haven't really lived up to our commitment at the state level. We've, over the time, put money in a little bit here and a little bit there and tried to take care of it. But so we're at a point now where what this bill does, someone in division mentioned it's kind of like a half a bill. It takes care of that very important component. But you'll notice when we go through the appropriations section, we do not have money to put onto the formula, which is really, kind of, I think, the first time that we haven't added extra dollars to the formula. And there's many other programs that we just had to say no to. In fact, we actually went in and made some reductions to try to come up with some extra funds to put together the bill that you have before you. So the division basically said, let's take care of this problem. Let's try to stabilize the funding out there with our districts. And the other component that this the division tried to put together was, with the help of the tax committee, was to reduce property taxes in the state of Minnesota. And in this proposal that you have before you, we have $100 million in property tax reductions across the state. What that translates into, to give you an idea, is that if we did nothing, if we did not pass this bill, the education levies in the state of Minnesota would go up over 11%, 11-some percent. With this bill and the property tax reductions of $100 million, we have cut that down to about 5.6%. So it's a significant reduction, and we have some runs to show the results of that. Two programs that we basically took some money from, but there's a basis for it. One is we kind of the it's called alternative compensation, or better known as the QComp program. There are currently about 34 districts that are in the QComp alternative compensation program. This was a program that the that was presumed to do be statewide, every district. It's not. It's very limited, and I think the feeling was is that it probably will. It should actually need a little more study before we move it to any kind of a position of statewide application. From our information from other states, it takes a period of 5 to 7 years to really test a program whether it's actually going to be a successful program or not. And so what we did is we froze the number of districts that are currently in QComp, or alternative compensation, at 34 districts for a period of 4 years. That will allow them to demonstrate whether it's a good program, it has good outcomes, it has demonstrates the kind of results that they're hoping for. The other program that we capped was the charter school program. Currently, I believe there's about 131 charter schools in the state of Minnesota. And that has been growing quite rapidly. The Department of Finance has does a report each year on the fastest growing components of state government expenditures. And that ranks as number one in terms of growth. What we have done here is to limit that number of charter schools to 150. And that is to take and step back, to take a look, open up a discussion as to how do the charter schools fit into the overall statewide education plan, public education plan in the state of Minnesota. I think that type of discussion is one that is very important. As we develop more and more charter schools, as the situation with many of our existing public schools been affected by declining enrollment, by a number of other problems, probably the most important one, the lack of adequate funding for our existing system, we need to have that discussion and move forward from there. So those are kind of the key components, except the last one, and I'll mention, and I'm proud of this one, but it's kind of like planting seed in the spring of the year. You don't really see the results until fall, and hopefully in fall you have a nice crop. And that is, when you look at special education rising about 4 to 5% per year, the logical question is what can we do to change that type of growth? And from all indications and from many different sectors, we heard that the most proven method of changing that growth is to make investments in the yearly years of our children by early screening, by the best practices in terms of addressing some of those disabilities at the very earliest possible time. And so we have in here a number of programs that are just kind of fledgling in the sense that they're not fully funded at any extent, but I think it gives us a good basis to move forward, and hopefully in a few years we'll see that that these programs have changed the direction of our special education environment. Obviously, the best would be as if we could address those problems at a very early age so that children do not have to go into special education. In testimony, we've heard over and over again that once children get into like the second and third grade and actually are put into special education, quite often they don't actually, that's where they stay. If you can prevent that from occurring and address it early, they may never really get into special education at all. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I would ask Mr. Nauman to go through the appropriations spreadsheet. I did leave out one important thing, and it's probably one of the most complicated things, and that is we have reformed some of the levies that we currently have by putting them together into one levy and address a uniform kind of an approach that works with our property tax reduction. And Mr. Nauman will explain that as we move forward, but it is a kind of a key component in the bill as well. I also want to thank the governor and his Department of Education for a lot of the good suggestions in reforming special education. Many of those provisions you'll see as we go through the language.
Okay, and before Mr. Nauman does that, Senator Stumpf, let me just make the comment that we know and share your disappointment in the bill you present. Would point out that in establishing targets, the target available to the Finance Committee I think a little under half of that target went to your division, and the other nine divisions shared the other 55%, 54% or so of the Finance Committee targets. So we'll see what happens as the bill progresses. Mr. Nauman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Good morning. I'm going to begin working off of the legal-sized document landscape format that at the time of printing this bill did not have a file number, so it's listed as appropriation tracking Senate file XXXX. Of course, it now does have Senate file 2095. Mr. Chairman and Senator Fredrickson, one of the pitfalls of the K-12 bill is there's lots of paper to look at with data runs and appropriations and property taxes. It says E-12 FY 2008-2009 budget, then appropriation tracking Senate file XXXX 2007 session. Okay. Mr. Chair and members, I want to quickly orient you across the columns because there is something a little bit unusual with the K-12 bill this year in that part of the special ed reform contained in the bill does have spending in fiscal year 2007, which is the current year that we are in. It is for that reason that we are showing tracking for fiscal year 2006 and 2007, and I will get to those columns as we move forward in the discussion. For each, so you have essentially three biennia tracked on this tracking sheet, which is, I think, a little bit unusual. The main numbers that I'm going to work off of are fiscal year 2008-2009, and then the difference Senate minus February. It's sort of in the center of the page, and it's probably the primary column that we'll be discussing. I've also received questions, why are some of the line items italicized and some of them underlined? And it is most of the committee members are on the division are familiar with this nomenclature, but the idea is that if there is an italicized line item, it indicates a policy change. If it is underlined, it is a program that is shifted on the K-12 90-10 payment schedule. Not particularly important for most of this conversation, but that is what it indicates. So, Mr. Chairman and members, beginning on line 8, that's the first. Oh, I should quickly add that in some cases where there's an italicized program, it's italicized somewhere in the process. It could be a governor's recommendation that doesn't show up as numbers on this occasion in the Senate bill. On line 8, there are two things going on with the Q comp limitation. The first is an elimination of the growth assumption for that is carried in the forecast. Members are probably aware that in the process of making a forecast, we do make some assumptions about districts that would come online, for example, on referendum, pass a higher referendum. But in this case, the assumption was that there would be future participation in the Q comp program. Some have felt that growth was not materializing at a level that justified such a high assumption. So that has been recaptured and spent elsewhere in the bill. That is the $62 million of savings on line 8. The second issue is that a policy decision was taken on line 9 to roll the existing districts and charter schools that participate in QComp out of the general education program, and that negative $39 million will show up later as an add back because it's going to be carried in the education excellence article of the bill. The governor recommended on line 13, and the Senate accepted a policy change to streamline the inside general education, the equity program, one of the more complicated programs inside education finance, and this streamlining will make it a little more transparent, and it carries a $3 million impact. Also, we have done a new regression analysis on the transportation sparsity formula. This relates to actual transportation costs, and that process has generated a $3.4 million cost. The governor on line 16 recommended some changes to the Job Z calculations, which property is taxed for referenda, which property is taxed for the purposes of debt service equalization. So on a couple of occasions, we'll discuss I'll just make reference to those changes as they show up on line items. Line 19 is the tax base replacement aid. This was previously appropriated as a separate line item. We felt that the governor recommended and the Senate bill accepted a change to just roll that inside general education. It seemed to make a touch more sense. Senator Stumpf referred earlier at the end of his comments about the consolidated levy. I'm not sure he named it as such, but that is what it's carried on in the bill. Under current law, there are three levies: operating, operating capital, equity, and transition. Each has a levy component levied on different tax bases and in a couple of occasions with different equalizing factors. So you end up with some districts carrying higher burdens than others. And this bill rolls the monetary value of those levies together and then buys it down by $100 million. And that process is carried on line 90. Members will, with a sharp eye, will say, well, why is there only a $90 million cost? And that does relate to the 90-10 payment schedule that I referred to earlier. I do note that I probably should have underlined that line. And Mr. Chairman and members, on line 21 is the first line item or first reduction as a result of the 150 charter school impact. There's a savings of $453,000 in the first in the second year of the biennium. On line 22, there's going to be three line items that we will discuss that relates to this policy initiative. Senator Fischbach and Senator Dill brought to the division a recommendation to provide $126,000 to the Eden Valley Watkins School District. This was the district that experienced a mercury spill and had some burdens to pay for the impact of that. It cost about $126,000. The committee, the division rather, approved a one-time loan that is paid in fiscal year 2008. And then beginning in 2009, a negative reduction on the district's general education aid over 4 years, $31,500 is taken. And to hold the district harmless, they are given levy permission, and that's carried on the levy tracking in an equal amount. So we give them the money, we take a reduction, and give them the opportunity to levy that back. It's a way of advancing the district and getting their cash, getting the district the money, and still holding the state harmless. On line 28, we have the zeroing out of the tax base replacement aid. We discussed that previously. We have a series of levies that have not been carried in the abatement aid calculations. The governor recommended including those, so there's a cost to that on line 30. The Browns Valley flood, we are holding the school district harmless for those impacts. For those estimated impacts, $115,000. When we make the consolidated levy, most districts do in fact end up with fewer levies. The property tax impacts go down. There were a collection of a few districts that did not, and on a one-time basis, those impacts are bought under the bill at a cost of $487,000. An education finance study is funded on line 40 at $75,000. On line 47, Mr. Chairman and members, is the charter school building lease aid. When you limit the number of charter schools that are in the system to 150, there is a reduction in the charter school building lease aid. That begins in fiscal year 2009 and carries effects into the tails and saves about $6.8 million in the subsequent biennium. Mr. Chairman and members, on line 48, the charter school startup aid has been taken to eliminate that line item. Skipping down now to line 61, best practices has been increased by $600,000. And on line 62, the Q comp has been added back. Members will recall a deletion in general education equal to $39 million. This is the add back. To Q comp participating schools and charter and districts, they will see no effect. We have just recaptured the growth assumption. On line 67, the collaborative urban educator program was increased by $944,000. And on line 69, the governor had a recommendation for a Minnesota Reading Corps, $2 million increase. Likewise, the governor recommended some funding on a one-time basis, the Mandarin Chinese Project, and in each year of the subsequent biennium, $250,000. Senator Torres-Rae and others brought forth a bill for what we refer to as STEM, Science, Technology, Engineering, and Math grants, $1.5 million, and some after-school learning grants on line 83 funded at $3.5 million each year. The St. Croix River Education District receives $900,000 over the biennium for the purposes of some RTI capacity building. And I skipped over line 85. Professional teaching standard grants is funded at $500,000 in fiscal year 2008 only.
Mr. Nauman, what is the RTI capacity building?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Fredrickson, I knew the minute I used that acronym that you were going to ask me. It stands for Response to Intervention, which has to do with I'm not the psychometrician expert on this, but it's my understanding that the way this works is an intervention for young kids is applied for teaching on an individual basis, and then that's frequently measured every couple of weeks. And if that shows a demonstrated change in reading, and for example, apply a psychometric intervention, and 2 weeks later it is measured. If that results in a change in performance, a student improvement, they would continue with it. If it doesn't, they would try something else. And it conforms with some of the direction that many states are moving and the federal government is encouraging.
Is this one district or one site?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Fredrickson, no, this is the St. Croix River Education District, which is a consortium of districts working together, and they're just given some money to begin moving down this road.
And, Mr. Chairman, Senator Fredrickson, this was one of those items that was put in the bill similar to, how we might address some of those early learning deficiencies so that they don't become bigger later on. And we're trying to, with a number of different kinds of interventions, we're trying to figure out how we can kind of stem that longer-term special ed cost.
This is one piece of what you mentioned earlier in your introductory remarks. Thank you.
I can point that out in the language as we go through the language.
Mr. Chair and members, most of the money that is spent in the K-12 bill is what we're about to move into. These are the special education accounts. And I'm now, for the purposes of the next few lines, going to ask you to also look at the 06-07 biennium beginning on line 91. There are a number of policy initiatives here in that we increased the funding for the so-called cap gap, funded that amount that has been capped relative to the statutory formula on three separate line items. And then the governor's recommendation included a series of roll-ins into special ed, including transition disabled and the Part C, which was previously appropriated under Senator Hottinger's committee last year as a separate line item. It seemed more appropriate now that we had to move forward and appropriate that as part of the regular special ed. So on line 91, in the 2007 biennium, there are three accounts in special education that receive increased funding. This is just an increase to get us up to the statutory formula. Line 91 increases by $123 million. That's the regular special ed. Excess cost increases by almost $1.8 million. And I apologize where the page breaks occurred on this. You have to flip to the next page. And again, I'm just working down fiscal 07. Transition disabled, that's line 102, also increased by $673,000. So those three line items together fund the cap gap. Now, if you sort of flip back to the previous page again, returning to line 91, there are now two things occurring on line 91 in fiscal year 2008 and through the balance of the spreadsheet. The first is the funding of that cap gap, but then also a growth factor of 4.6% has been installed in the language of the bill that returns to the growth factor that we had in law prior to the 2003 legislative session. So members will note it increases to 164, 196, 230, and $166 million, respectively, over the next two biennia, and that's the growth of the 4.6% plus the addition of the cap gap, which was installed in fiscal year 2007. On line 92 and 93 is the transition disabled program, and as it is rolled into regular special ed. We have a line subsequent down the spreadsheet for transition disabled, and members will note that that gets zeroed out. So the first thing that happens is actually line 93, where the transition programs are added, and because we are inflating the program at 4.6%, we also have an inflation line, and that's line 92. So those two items work together. Then finally, and we'll talk about this again when we get down to the early childhood accounts, we're adding in the Part C expansion to both regular ed, regular special ed, and excess cost. There is no impact of that for fiscal year 2008 and 2009, but beginning in 2010, there is some additional cost associated with that change. Can I do that when we get down to? And Mr. Chairman and members, you'll also note that on line 98, we now have the increases to excess cost. Again, we funded the cap gap for excess cost as well. And then that program is inflated at 2% per year, so there's also an inflation on that over the years. So that begins to take effect in 2008. And then Part C is also added on line 99. So there's a number of items going on there. And finally, the last piece of special ed is the transition program I mentioned that is being zeroed out and rolled because it's being rolled up into regular special ed. So you see the base on the final payment in fiscal year 2008 of $879,000. And then the effect on that final payment from the growth in the prior year is $76,000. So that's shown on line 102. There's a lot of things going on there. So in order to summarize to the bill, we have added lines 107, 108, and 109. So you can see in fiscal year 2007, the appropriation for regular special ed is $652,791,000. Excess cost, $106,120,000, and transition, $9.4 million. We thought that would simplify matters and at least allow members to see the pieces as well as the final appropriations.
And Mr. Chairman and members, just to kind of reiterate that, what this does is that in statute we have a formula for the state's responsibility for special education, and this just brings us up to that formula. It does not pay. Some people think, well, with all the money that's going in here, we're paying for everything in special ed. That's not true. There's a local share, the state share, which is really the statutory amount that we're funding, and then, of course, the federal government puts in a share.
Okay, so members, I'm now moving into the facilities, and I mentioned earlier that there was some references down the spreadsheet for the Job Z tax-based definition change. That shows up on line 116, and I'm now working again off of the 0609 column, just for members' information. On line 118, the telecommunication access grants are increased by $8.2 million. The Red Lake School District, again, some follow-on impacts as a result of the shooting that occurred there in 2005, $132,000 increase for that school district. On line 123 is the payment for the Eden Valley Watkins Mercury loan, and then that concludes the increases for facilities. On line 132, moving down to nutrition, school lunch reimbursements are increased by 1.5 cents. That carries a $3 million impact, which concludes the nutrition programs. Under libraries, basic support is increased by $753,000, $280,000 increase to multi-county, multi-type library systems. And there is a parallel between the regional library telecommunications aid and the telecommunications access, which goes to school districts. So increasing one, we should increase the other. So there's a $1.5 million increase for the library portion. And so, members, that concludes the education aids to school districts portion of the bill, and we'll now move on to the early childhood accounts. There is nothing on the
pause for just a second here, Mr. Any questions from the committee on this this part of the presentation? You have a question?
Oh, no.
I don't see any questions, so proceed.
Mr. Chairman, that's either a good thing or a bad thing. I'm not sure which. Skipping to the next page, Mr. Chairman and members, I guess we're on to the last page. Sorry. Second to the last page. Mr. Chairman, I apologize. The version that I have is missing page 4.
It was passed out to us.
It was just passed out.
Okay. Okay, so I'm now looking at line 55, and I have that as the early childhood and family education. Okay, sorry, line 156. This is the ECFE program. Several members brought in bills that made changes to ECFE, and the language of the bill returns to the formula that was in place prior to the 2003 budget cutting session. And that it goes to $5.5 million increase. Health and developmental screening aid increases by almost $1.4 million under the language of the bill. And we mentioned earlier a roll-in of the early childhood Part C eligibility, and there's the reduction of $1.4 million. Then there was a sizable amount of conversation in the division about the so-called pre-kindergarten education allowances. This is Senator Clark's Senate File 3. There was insufficient funding to fully fund that program, but what we are doing is carrying some reduced costs and an estimate of the administration of the program. So there's $2.1 million there. Prevention areas, that's community ed and school age care and others, as well as self-sufficiency and lifelong learning programs, primarily adult basic education, is funded at the base. Skipping now down to line 195, I believe other bills that this committee has seen include a 3.25% salary adjustment. They're similar to other bills. That increase is carried in the K-12 bill for the Department of Education, the Board of Teaching, and the school administrators. There's language in the bill to ensure that that money is spent for that purpose. An addition of the Duluth Children's Museum of $100,000. Minnesota, Washington, D.C. Office, there was separate funding under the Department of Education to pay for that, has been zeroed out under this bill. And those are the changes for the Department of Education. And now I think we move back to the previous document. The 3.25% increase for both the Perpich and the Faribault Academies occurs on lines 212 and 220. And then, as Senator Stumpf mentioned, I'm skipping now down to line 240 as the next change. The spending that is made by the tax committee to segregate money for the so-called education improvement account in the general fund occurs on line 240. The allocation of that $75 million actually does occur in the bill that you have before you, but it is spending counted under the tax committee, and so we are netting that off to reach the target that the division was responsible for receiving. So that occurs on line 242. And the 0809 biennium increases $371.9 million.
Remember, okay, so how do we do that?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
So we have the line item in the bill
For the $75 million, in the hopes that the tax committee will provide the money, which we don't have.
Mr. Chairman and members, the instructions that we received to in the construction of this bill were to include the property tax reductions in the bill equal to $75 million, and the committee went actually a little bit higher than that, using some of its target for property tax reductions equal to about an additional 15. The 498 is what the committee had to spend. The tax committee is going to spend $75 million to support the property tax reductions contained in this bill. And so to net out to the target that this committee gave to the Education Finance Division, we're netting off the $75 million and then coming into a total so that you can see that we, in fact, did spend the 498.
And then that money increases slightly in the out years.
Mr. Chairman, the TALES target for the division was $516 million, and we met that target, and I think we left $1,000 for you to work with.
Thank you. I was going to give that to Senator Anderson.
Thank you.
And, Mr. Chairman, one permutation here, and I'll answer the question in advance. I'm sure Senator Fredrickson will catch it. On line 242, the difference Senate minus February, $371.9 million is substantially below the 498. But remember that there is spending in fiscal year 2007, so combining those two numbers gets you the 498.
Mr. Chairman, another question. So would it be accurate to say that this bill spends the 498 plus the 75, tax bill?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Fredrickson, yes and no. I think it kind of depends on how you choose to count it. Certainly, if you look at line 234, which is the accounting of how much increased appropriations are in the bill, it goes up by $75 million more than the target. However, the tracking for that 75 and 83 in the TALES is being carried on the tax side of things. So, Mr. Chairman and members, I know that the property tax tracking is primarily a tax committee jurisdiction, but I thought I would go quickly through yet one of the other documents that we have in front of you. Again, it looks very similar, the orientation, legal size, the nomenclature in the upper left-hand corner, again, repeats E12-0809 budget. In this occasion, it says property tax tracking, Senate file XXXXXX. And I will just quickly highlight,
yes,
for the purposes of this discussion, two quick items. On line, and I'm working off the column that says Senate FY 2009 pay 2008 certified estimate, maybe not quite halfway across the page, difference Senate current Senate minus current law for taxes payable in 2008.
Wait, I didn't find it. Which column is
it? And this is fiscal year 2009 we're looking at. Okay. We call it taxes payable 2008. On lines 7, 8, and 9 are the zeroing out of the transition new formula, equity, and operating capital levies. Those total to about $219 million collectively. On line 16 is the instatement of the consolidated levy. And members will note that comes in at $119 million. Netting those two off against each other is the reduction of $100 million of statewide property tax levy. There's also some levy savings associated with the QComp growth assumption limitation. That shows up on line 14. And as the property tax is, as QComp is rolled out of general education, there's an $11.8 million savings associated with that. However, that line item does get added back later on in the spreadsheet. So you can see on a tracking basis, the property tax for general ed goes down 118. 11.8 of that is added back. And because in any bill that we are passing this year, we can't really affect property taxes for 2008, yet there is a calculation There is language in the bill that recaptures that QCOMP growth in fiscal year 2008. We have a lagging adjustment in fiscal year 2009 property taxes. That's on line 72. Another $6.9 million of savings there. There's a few other small initiatives, some small levy authorities for a few districts, a couple of fund transfers that carry an impact. And then moving down to the very last page, Mr. Chairman and members, I'm now on line 173. And, of course, if you have discussions about other items on this tracking, I'd be pleased to go through them. But you can see in that column, we are down $110 million in property taxes. On line 75 on the change from prior year, you can see that the current law is down, property taxes increase 11.8%. And under the language of this bill, we are estimating property tax increases from between fiscal year 2009 and 2008 at 5.6%. Those are the numbers that Senator Stump spoke to earlier.
Mr. Chairman and members, if you would like me to go through the language of the bill, I'd be happy to do that.
So, Senator Stump, if you could, word by word, but give us a sense of what's in the bill over the sections. Yes.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, members, Article 1 is the general education article, and I know Mr. Nauman's been giving the bulk of the presentation, and I'm going to ask that he would also step us through Article 1 in the language, because there's a lot of intricacies in terms of what we're doing. So then I'll pick up in Article 2 and go through the rest of it.
Mr. Chairman, I'll skip over a number of sections as we go, just to be mindful of your time. Section 1 is primarily technical. Section 2 relates to the transportation sparsity change on the regression analysis. Section 3 is there's a few little policy changes in there, but primarily technical, as is Section 5. Beginning in Section 6 is the first portion of the rollout of the QCOMP program. We needed to create some new calculations for general education revenue. Section 7 is the basic formula allowance subdivision. Had there been a change to the formula allowance, it would have appeared here. Members will note that the formula allowance stays in this bill at 49.74. Section 8 and 9 is setting the aid and levy calculations for operating capital for only one more year. Had those sections are also get repealed at the end of the article, because a separate calculation is no longer needed in a consolidated levy environment. Section 10 is the primary changes to the transportation sparsity. Sections 11, 12, and 13 are the sections that create the streamlining of the equity. This was the equity revenue formula. That was a governor's recommendation. Sections 14 and 15 again set the levies for equity aid and levy calculations for one more year. Again, not needed after fiscal year 2008. When the streamlining of the equity program occurs, there are some districts that see some negative impacts of that, so those districts are held harmless in Section 16 and 17. Transition, again, returning to a theme, the transition aid and levies are set for one more year, and then those sections repealed at the end of the article. Section 20, some cleanup on in the middle of the page, lines, I assume I'm working off the same version. Yes, those originally struck language, 9.14 through 9.21, old obsolete language. And then we are leaving QCOMP in general education for just one more year, and then it becomes rolled out. However, members will note on the subsequent page that we are setting the entitlement for QCOMP at a substantially lower level. That's the recapture of the growth. The aid and levy calculations phase out as well. Then on Section 23 is the consolidated tax rate. members will see on 10.30 that we are setting the statewide levy at $119.2 million statewide. That does tie to the property tax tracking. The consolidated levy is actually imposed in Section 24, and in the event that some districts would be off the formula in Section 25, there's a recapture provision. The actual payment of general education aides is Section 26. We needed to make some adjustments to that, those calculations, to reflect the consolidated levy environment. There's a wind energy deduction for school districts in Section 27, some maintenance of effort calculations for it relates more to special ed for cooperatives. Some levy increases for alternative intermediate school districts, and some technical changes in Section 30, and transportation sparsity adjustments in Section 31. The abatements and the tax increment sections 32 and 33 were out of sync with the current levies. We mentioned this during the tracking, so there are some updates to those. Some tired Senate staffer incorrectly appropriated the one-time energy assistance last year in 2007, and it should have been 2006, so we're correcting that. And then the limitation on QComp for the next four fiscal year is in Section 37. The fix for any districts that had some increase of levies in fiscal year 2009 is carried in the consolidated levy adjustment. That's Section 37. Section 38, Mr. Chairman, you asked about previously. This is the education improvement account. There will be language in a tax bill that puts the money in the account, and they'll carry the cost. This is having the money canceled to the education for the purposes of education. Section 39 and 40 are some people hold harmless for the Browns Valley School District as a result of the flood. Section 41 is an education finance study, and then the appropriations that you are familiar with. Then again, the repealers, Mr. Chairman, are those that I sort of mentioned as we went through, those sections that we limit, primarily are limiting for the purposes of the consolidation levy and the QComp rollout.
Okay. Mr. Chairman and members, Article 2, which relates to educational excellence, Section 1 is a department language relating to the charter schools' records and what happens to those records when a charter school would close or something would happen. Section 2 is a provision that Senator Rummel brought to us, which would synchronizes the math or the career and technical education courses that have to satisfy certain math and science requirements. And they have worked hard and have done an excellent job in that. Section 3, Senator Wieger, is a provision that requires districts' annual reports. Section 4 is department language that includes the International Baccalaureate, and that goes on through page 27. Currently, it's just the
that's all part of
the same. That's all up to page 27.
Page 27.
Section 5 is some language from the department, governor's proposal, basically updating language. Section 6 is a provision that I believe Senator Wieger's passed in Senator Wieger's committee relating to school counseling. Section 7 is a provision relating to alternative compensation, and this is where the alternative compensation is added back into, if you remember, we took it out of general education article, added it back into the educational excellence article, which is the article we're on. And then section 8 relates to the same thing. That's the levy portion. Section 9 is the alternative teacher compensation aid component. And section 10 is a provision that was to encourage the college and the school's concurrent enrollment teacher approval enhancement. That particular program, the governor would like to see expanded, and what this does is it allows or tries to encourage that more of our teachers get certified so that they can teach those college courses in high school. Section 11 is an update. Section 12 is governor's language, which allows districts to for certain, it expands the transportation for certain students who are English language learner program. Section 13 is a clarification of who's eligible for the online learning programs. Section 14 limits the number of charter schools, and I mentioned that earlier on page 34. That is set at 150 charter schools. Section 15 kind of corrects who's responsible for the reporting. Currently, I believe it's the superintendent's. Currently it's the commissioner. The commissioner's role, and that is just kind of not consistent with what's happening. Section 16 relates to the federal compliance. Section 17 is directs what happens to records when a charter school is terminated or closed. Section 18 is a brought to us by Senator Scheid and Senator Therese Ray relating to after-school community learning programs. As you know, back in 2003, most of those after-school programs were wiped out. Section 19 was some language in the governor's proposal relating to the Minnesota Reading Core program. Section 20 was Senator Olson and Senator Wergen. This expands the career and technical levy from the current of $80 to $92. And Section 21 is technical. Section 22 relates to the multiracial diversity waiver process. Section 23 relates to how scholarships are processed and the procedures for those. Section 24 was an amendment that was offered in division. Senator Wieger, it's an encouragement for parental involvement in the language spells out what expectations are. Section 25.
Senator Stumpf?
Yes.
It doesn't look like an encouragement. It looks like a mandate. So what happens, it says, for instance, the school board must convene an advisory committee composed of an equal number of resident parents, et cetera. So what happens if the school district does not convene an advisory committee composed of an equal number of resident parents who are not district employees?
Mr. Chairman, there's no penalties if the school district does not do it.
So why do we have that language in there?
I guess, Mr. Chairman, that's the encouragement in order to. It's, I guess, like a lot of things that we do here, it's more trying to send a message.
Okay. So in some place in the bill, do we have a grant to the school districts to encourage the appropriate and correct use of English language in terms of possible misnomers and legislative advisories?
Mr. Chairman, we probably should, but we don't.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it looks like down on lines 41, 24 through 27, it says the board must consider practices, and I'm assuming that then the local, and that I assume, Senator Stumpf, does that relate to the school board, individual school board, correct? Each district?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pariseau, that's correct.
So that sounds like the accountability piece there.
You know, Senator Stumpf, the kidding aside about the language, you know, arguably you could bring an action in district court to compel a school board to comply with the language of the statute. It might be an encouragement, it might be advisory, but the language suggests what must happen, and that could make it actionable.
He's right.
I'm not volunteering to handle litigation, but I could make the case.
That's right.
Mr. Chairman, I think you're right. I think most school districts probably have an advisory board. I can't speak for the districts because this was actually was added right before our bill left the division. I haven't had a chance to visit with the school boards themselves about that. But the kids at those charter schools
all have very high proficiency. Well, Senator Stumpf, I don't want to belabor this, but my school district, the St. Paul School District, has what I think, at least talking to the parents and teachers in my area, a very effective system that's been established in terms of the site councils and the integration with the school district. And I think it has strengthened the relationship between families, schools, and so on. And maybe in my area, given the socioeconomic level, it works particularly well. But the language is clearly mandatory. And I'm not encouraging disgruntled parents out there to, you know, bring some kind of action, but the language would clearly allow for that.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Betzel.
Mr. Chair, Senator Stumpf, you had indicated this was done right before you wrapped up the bill. Was this done because a bill had been introduced, or was it just an amendment that was off in the committee?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Betzel, I'm not positive if this has gone through Senator Wieger's committee or not, but it was brought to the division in the form of an amendment.
An amendment, okay. Mr. Chair, that
oh, okay. Mr. Chairman, just to clarify, it was heard in the policy committee and passed.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman and members, Section 25 was the is that process for the early intervention language that goes with Senator Frederickson's question on the RTI. This is supposed to be, and it goes on for couple pages or a page and a half. You can look over that. It's supposed to be scientifically based instruction in reading programs, and then talks about the approach or best practices that are supposed to be used to help those young students. Section 26.
Chairman, on that section.
Senator Pariseau.
Mr. Chairman, on that section, that's on page 42, in the middle of page four. Lines 42 through 22, they talk about administering tests to all students in kindergarten through grade 8 at least 3 times per year. Are these in addition to the lesson tests? Are these are learning assessments, aren't they?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pariseau, yes, these are not really tests in the sense of these are more like, at least the way it was explained, like kind of more immediate feedback as to whether a student, where a student, or whether a student was achieving a certain component. And this was, has been used, I believe, in that St. Croix Educational District for a number of years with a number of the districts involved in that. And the basis is that when they get quick feedback, that they can identify where the student's shortcomings are and can address different strategies to try to correct it.
Well, I was just trying to decide, because we hear from some of the teachers sometimes when they say, when you mandate that we have to test, da-da-da-da-da, we're over-testing the kids. You know, a lot of them would say we're spending all our time over-testing the kids, and I don't know what kind these are, if they're short short ones that just could be conducted quickly in about a 10-minute time frame in a classroom, I'm not sure. Or whether these are some long, complicated assessment type that they're referring to.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pirro, so I don't, it's my understanding that it is not kind of another test like an MCA test or a standards type test. It's more of an assessment kind of a process to identify whether where the student's at or whether the student has achieved that particular goal or whatever.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Anderson.
It's a little hard to follow this whole thing, but it's to me it looks like it says this is none of this occurs unless a child is or if you're considering referring a child for a special education evaluation, and then you have to do some different things. That's the only time these requirements kick in. And the second part is some options. Under B, these are options for a district. It says they may meet the requirement under A by doing one of these, using these criteria. So I don't think any of it is mandatory unless you are looking at referring a child to special education. So the idea is to do it in a different way, to really go through more precise kinds of criteria that will really help identify children early and try different learning strategies that may determine they don't need special education in some cases.
And Mr. Chairman and Senator Anderson's correct. And one of the additions that I think we touched on in this the appropriation spreadsheet was that there was some additional money put into the early assessments for students. I think Senator Rummel passed that. This is actually not only Senator Saltzman, I think it was Senator Olson, too, worked on this particular approach, feeling that we can do a whole lot better with our early identification, with early interventions, things like that, and it's our hope too. I think that's the best approach to controlling our long range special education costs.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Stump, I'm starting to feel that segment probably does what I would hope it had done, and that would be not blankly defining people as a special ed category when in fact looking underneath would. Yep. Recover that they just need a little assistance once in a while.
Yep. Mr. Chairman and Senator Pirro, so that's the whole goal.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, Section 26, Senator Wieger extended the rulemaking authority there. Section 27 is the Mandarin Chinese program. Section 28 was... provision relating to rulemaking on, I believe it's the waivers for the Board of Teaching, and then Section 29 are the appropriations for the Article 2 Education Excellence. Special Ed, Mr. Nauman can run us through.
Mr. Chairman and members, again, I will quickly go over some of these that relate to a general theme. Currently, under current law, special ed districts are paid for special ed costs on a two-year lag, and the governor recommended and the Senate bill accepted a update to current year funding. I think this is something that many of the districts have called for many years, and we feel like we've got a system in place now that allows us to do that. So I'm going to refer to just an update to current year funding. Section 1 accomplishes that, as does Section 2 for the Transition Disabled Program, and 3. Section 4 is relates to the LEP services and where they are provided. Current law, LEP services may not be provided at a non-public non-public school. Senator Roebling had an amendment coming out of division to add that, so that instead of at a public school or a neutral site, now districts could provide non-public LEP services at a non-public school. There's some clarifying language in section 5, and a definitional change in section 6 that conforms with federal law. A few technical pieces in section 7. Part C is rolled into regular special ed beginning in section 8. Senator Pogemiller brought to the committee some reporting for districts on the litigation costs associated with special ed. And then we are making some updates to some obsolete language in section 10 and in on lines 60.12 to 60.13, the increase of the program growth factor to 4.6% discussed earlier. Update to current year funding in section 11. And we're also including the roll-in of transition disabled in the definition of regular special ed. Section 12 sets the entitlements for regular special ed. These numbers will not actually show up on the spreadsheet because they are entitlements. So, again, there's that 90-10 payment schedule that I discussed earlier. We're eliminating some base year funding mechanisms that are no longer needed in a current year funding environment. Moving on to excess cost statute in section 14, there's the 2% growth factor on lines 19 and 20 on page 63. Some obsolete language that's no longer needed in a current year funding system in section 15 has been deleted. Section 16 sets the entitlements for excess cost aid. Clarifying the definition of general education and how that's calculated through the out-of-state tuition special education statute. A simple update in section 18. And then, Mr. Chairman, perhaps of most note to this committee is where we do the appropriations to regular special ed, special education excess cost, and transition disabled in fiscal year 2007. The statutes from the appropriations from the prior biennium are brought into this bill, stricken, the 07 appropriations are stricken, and a higher number is replaced. This is the cap-gap funding that I spoke of earlier. Section 22 allows an exemption for certain districts or cooperatives from the tuition billing system, a provision that was carried in a bill a few years back to streamline the education, the special education finance system. Some of the intermediate school districts and others are having some difficulty getting there, so another one-year exemption is carried in this bill. Section 23 establishes the transition disabled entitlement for fiscal year 2007. This is necessary because the statute is repealed in other parts of the bill related to the roll into regular education, and because we have that 1 year look back, it was necessary to carry the appropriation here. Then you have the appropriations for the special education article of the bill.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, Article 4.
Before we get to Article 4, let me just ask some from Mr. Neumann. Section 12, where we've got the appropriations specified for this biennium and for the next biennium, is that basically an inflator, or is that how are those numbers determined?
Mr. Chairman, there are a series of modeling that we do in order to calculate the entitlements for special education. This does not actually constitute an appropriation, but instead reflects a number of things. First, the funding of the cap gap, which you see as the 2007 number, and then the 2008 and later numbers reflect both the funding of the cap gap plus the 4.6% inflator, which you will see on a couple pages previously, lines 60.12 and 60.13. And in addition to that, there's the roll-in of the Part C and the transition disabled. Normally what we would do, Mr. Chairman, is simply set an appropriation for the prior – or not an appropriation, an entitlement for the prior year and then the subsequent year, and then it would be driven off of the calculations on lines 62.7 through 62.11. This year is somewhat different because we are rolling in those additional calculations. We felt it was important that the easiest way to accomplish that was to actually set the entitlements in law, and then the formula will drive after those entitlement after those roll-ins have been calculated.
Okay. Let me ask, where did the inflator of 4.6 come? I found the statutory reference. Where is it? What's the origin of that figure?
Chairman,
why 4.6 as opposed to sure. CPI?
Okay. Mr. Chairman, that is basically derived from the growth in special ed expenditures, which is someplace between roughly around 4.5%. And so it's a little bit under the actual growth that's occurring. And that reflects back on kind of the growth factor that we had plugged in back in 2001 or 2000, I believe.
1999.
So actually it is probably a little bit less than what the actual expenditures will be. Is that okay?
That's fine. Okay, so those numbers in Section 12, doing the arithmetic, reflect the 4.6.
Again, Mr. Chairman, I see you punching numbers on your calculator, and I wish it were as simple as what I think you're doing. There's a 4.6 growth factor.
Sorry.
In addition to several of the roll-ins. I dearly wish it were that simple. We do a series of calculations to make that happen. We've got a series of roll-ins, so the numbers are inflated both by the roll-ins as well as the 4.6 and other things, ratios of pupils and other mitigating factors.
Okay. Well, I apologize. I'll put the calculator away. See? I'll use it on Senator Tomasoni's bill. I won't use it anymore on this bill.
Mr. Chairman, I'd happily have you come down and work with me on the model. We could.
But the numbers as represented in the bill then, maybe I shouldn't use my calculator, but I'll just do this one in my head. That would be 134, about $148 million then would be the difference, obviously, from this fiscal year to the out year. But that's all based upon whatever the inflator model is.
Mr. Chairman, that is roughly correct. I mean, 140 is, in fact, if you take the sum of the total special ed regular excess cost and transition disabled, sum them together on an entitlement basis, you end up with about $140 million. So your math is pretty darn near close.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks for helping. Can I just inquire, Mr. Watson? When Senator Miriam chaired the committee, was he ever chastised for using his calculator?
He did it in his head.
He actually didn't have a calculator, I don't think.
Mr. Chairman, I don't recall that he was.
Yeah, okay. All right. Okay, Senator Stump.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Article 4 on page 70 is an article. The first number of pages, 71 to 75, relate to a program that is relatively old. It's a program relating to cooperation combination assistance to school districts that would kind of aim their direction toward eventual consolidation. This is a proposal that was brought to us by Senator Rosen, and it is also a proposal that does not have any funding in the bill. We did send, and you, at your request, a request for some one-time money for this particular program, and that is the language changes that were made to try to make that program function better. I can't remember. I think the one-time request that was submitted was, I think it was $50 million or something along that line.
This might be unfair, Senator Stumpf, from the full committee, but given the size of this bill and what we expect to happen to this bill, I wouldn't be optimistic about the one-time request. And I probably don't need my calculator to work on that one.
Sorry,
my calculator doesn't – on the one-time money, my calculator is set at such a low amount. I have the stuff in the calculator jams.
Is it dead battery passively or dying battery?
Mr. Chairman. Does that apply to divisions who don't make fun of your calculator also?
not all of them.
Okay.
We're good.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, members, Section 5 is a governor's and department recommendations on Job Z exemption. Section 6 sets the appropriation for the debt service. Section 7 is, again, related to that Job Z. Section 8 is a clarification on the ballot language, and the clarification is on relating to the number of years, which is found on line 32. Before, it was just silent. Here, it is set at not to exceed 10 years. Section 10 is provision, Senator Wieger's provision relating to ice arena levies. There were a number of levies that were in 2003 that were reduced from 100% to something less, which was 90%. And over the last number of years, we've been restoring some of those levies back to 100%. The ice arenas were one levy that now, under this proposal, would be restored to 100%. Section 11, section...
Mr. Chairman?
Senator
Perso. A question on that section that you just talked about, the ice arena levy. Is this one that has anything to do with qualifying for the debt service offered by the state to school districts for maintenance or for maybe for building? I can't recall if it's building or maintenance or both of ice arenas, ice sheets?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Perso, no. This basically has relates to the operation of ice arenas.
Well, it's a issue that's kind of dear to a lot of people, and I know closely. And is the debt service linked to anything in this bill?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Perso, the debt service was a provision that actually we had in our committee. And in visiting with Senator Bach and Senator Skoy, our charge was to try to figure out a way to reduce property taxes in a uniform way, or fairly uniform way. And their request, I, from the tax perspective, or from the tax committee, was to tackle the challenge of reducing property taxes in a number of other ways. One of them was the debt service equalization levy, which I believe we sent that bill from our committee to the tax committee, where they were dealing with those other tax changes. But no, this does not relate to this only relates to the operating and maintenance of ice arenas.
Thank you.
Section 11 and they kind of go hand in hand with Section 14 and Section 15. Minneapolis and St. Paul school districts have a bond authorization for maintenance of their facilities, maximum of $15 million per year, And that authorization comes, usually it's given for a period of years. As you know, on the top of page 80, this runs out in 2008. They requested an extension, and this allows them a four-year extension. Section 12, again, relates to the Job Z clarification, what property is included or not included. Section 13 is a provision that Senator Lynch had relating to the timing of... you can see the language on page 81, when a levy would be certified, and there's been kind of a, or there's a consensus that that's achievable. Section 14 and 15 I mentioned as relates to the St. Paul bond authorization. Section 16 is a provision that Senator Betzel brought before us relating to the lease levy for administrative space in Spring Lake Park. Section 17 was a provision Senator Scoy brought for demolishing a school building in Clearbrook Gonvig. Section 18 is a provision that Senator Dill and Senator Fischbach relating to the environmental cleanup of the mercury spill. And then, Mr. Chairman and members, is the appropriation section that goes with that. Article 5 is a has both nutrition and accounting, and Section 1 was a provision relating to the structurally balanced school district's budget. There were some changes made there, and that I believe was heard in Senator Wieger's committee. It was heard in Senator Wieger's committee in past. Section 2 was a provision brought to us by Senator Carlson eliminating a number of reserve accounts. And Section 3 was a bill that I proposed to increase the reimbursement for school lunches by 1.5 cents per meal. And Section 4 was a provision, or kind of goes hand in hand with the school finance study. This one relates to an operating cost differential study, which PS Minnesota and a number of other organizations, education organizations, have been kind of wrestling with. Section 5 is an update, and then Section 6 has the fund transfers, and you can see the fund transfers, I believe all of them except two of them, are cost-free. The two that do carry a cost are Floodwood and the Red Rock Central. And then, of course, Mr. Chairman, the appropriations in Section 7. Article 6 relates to the libraries. Senator Olsen had language that was brought before the committee, and basically that's a pretty simple, straightforward, mostly appropriations article. Article 7, Mr. Nauman can walk us through.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Section 1 is some changes to the Head Start statute, ensuring that Head Start programs are paid on children served. Section 2 was an amendment added in division, ensuring that in the health and developmental screening aid, that parents are notified of their ability to opt out of that program. The increased allowances for the health and developmental screening aid, which carries an appropriation, is changed in Section 3. Section 4 is an MDE, a Department of Education update to current practice, it allows ECFE programs to not limit to just district residents. Section 5 requires an ECFE plan and program data be submitted to the Department of Education prior to levy certification. Section 6 increases the ECFE allowance from $112 to $120. This returns to the post, the pre 2003 formula prior to the budget cutting session. Section 7, the stricken language is just a cleanup. And then the new language at the bottom ties back to the plan and program data submission requirements that levies can't be certified until NDE receives a plan. There's in Section 8 allows ECFE to use up to 10% of their revenue for certain operating costs, certain operating capital costs. Section 9 aligns to current practice. There was some uncertainty into the in the home visiting levy about how that funding could be used. Section 10 is a clarification. I believe added to the school readiness statute, saying that it can be used for early literacy skills. Section 11 begins Senate File 3. This was a bill carried by Senator Clark relating to the pre-kindergarten allowances. This is a cleanup to the Minnesota Early Learning Foundation statute. They will be integral to that process. And Section 12 is the Pre-Kindergarten Education Act. First sets forth a purpose, and then in Subdivision 2, the allowances are set. Currently in this bill, a child of an eligible child ages eligible parent or guardian of a child will receive ages 3 and 4 would receive $1 for each. And then if your income fell underneath $10,000, you would receive an additional $10. Subdivision 3 sets forth the commissioner's duties under A. Allowances must be sent to eligible recipients. The commissioner under B must align data received from the Department of Revenue under the federal tax process. And an alternate process to ensure that no allowances are double paid. Paragraph C sets forth a process for transferring the allowance. D establishes that the monetary value must be stated. E sets that is a commissioner review of some Head Start grantees. Subdivision 4 is the alternate process primarily for non-tax filers. Subdivision 5 relates to how the each allowance would be redeemed. Subdivision 6 is the Department of Education payment system for the allowances, paying eligible providers. Subdivision 7 sets forth the individual uses, what an allowance could be used for. Subdivision 8 received a fair amount of conversation. It establishes who is certified, how that certification occurs. Primarily, it relates to a quality rating under the Minnesota Early Learning Foundation's quality rating system, which is currently in pilot phase. For fiscal years 2009 and 2010, in those occasions where a quality rated provider is not eligible, the allowance could be used to build quality. Subdivision 9 ensures that the allowances would not be counted for other state programs as income. Section 13 continues the Pre-Kindergarten Allowance Act in that for the Department of Revenue to make some transfers of data to both education and human services. Some authority must be provided for that purpose, and that's done for human services in Section 13 and Section 14. The allowance data that the Department of Revenue must disseminate is set forth in Section 15. And then in Section 16, Human Services and Education are asked to work together to recommend any changes to. Thank you, Senator. Recommend any changes to the payment system. Full implementation of this would not occur until fiscal 09, so they felt that there was some time to do that. an extra 45 days on that data transmission in the first year, 2007, is provided to the Department of Revenue. And then, Mr. Chairman and members, the appropriations are set. I will note that under Subdivision 8, the pre-kindergarten allowances, in the absence of a fully completed fiscal note on the administrative costs for each of the agencies, we have made the appropriation to the Department of Education, then allowed some transfer authority. We're hoping before this completely passes the Senate that we will have a completed fiscal note that would give us the opportunity to appropriate the right amount to each agency. And that concludes.
So as I understand, in this section, the current appropriation being carried is what, base level funding?
Mr. Chairman and members, again, we're talking about Subdivision 8. The pre-kindergarten education allowances is new policy. This is a Senator Clark bill. The Senate fiscal staff did some work based on the governor's recommendation to approximate what we thought, in addition to the allowances in the bill, what we thought the administrative costs for human services, education, and revenue would be as a result of the requirements in the language of the bill. We think that we're fairly close on this, but the fiscal note has not yet been finalized. And so what we have done is appropriated the money to the Department of Education and allowed some transfer authority from education to revenue and human services. We certainly did not want to imply a level of precision that we didn't have in completing individual appropriations for that administration to each of the individual agencies until such time as a fiscal note has been completed.
And obviously this bill has a significant change in how the appropriations are handled. And I assume there was, we're not going to have testimony today, but I assume there was significant work on this, Senator Stumpf, in the division and Senator Wieger's committee. Is that?
Mr. Chairman, yes. This has been under discussion, I think, in a number of committees.
And was there, is the language that we have here consensus language? Was there significant opposition to it?
Senator Clark says it's consensus.
Was there consensus on your committee with the adoption of this language?
I think the, Mr. Chairman, there, because it was a new program, I think there were some discussions that probably are still, how can I put it, being developed. And the department has, and I think Mr. Nauman mentioned it, the Subdivision 8 on page 100 relating to provider certification and the process in which providers would be deemed eligible. There's, I think, a lot of these things are either, you know, I think being worked out with the department. MILF, which is a proposal, the rating system, which was a proposal that Senator Hottinger had been working on for last couple years, is kind of taking the charge for developing this kind of a provider certification. And I believe they have several pilot projects that are currently in existence. And so I think, as you know, I'd be hesitant to say that everything is perfectly worked out, but I think that the discussions and the comments are such that I think Senator Clark feels that they're workable.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pariso.
Mr. Chairman, on this section of what you've been discussing, I have one amendment and I have a second one as well, and maybe they address both of the points that you just mentioned. The first one, and I'm going to offer it.
Well, Senator Pariso, could I ask you to hold off the amendments? Let Senator Stumpf just finish explaining the bill, and let's get to amendments. Is that okay?
All right.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Fredrickson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stumpf, I'm still a little curious how the pre-kindergarten section works, the eligibility. Subdivision 2 just states that each child will receive an allowance of $1. Now, it seems like there should be more there. Is there another section? Is that a dollar per day? Or what am I not seeing here?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Fredrickson, under the language of the bill, an annual allowance for a child, the parent or guardian of a child aged 3 or 4, is $1. Added to that amount, if your income is below $10,000, you would receive an additional add-on of $10. So if your income was below $10,000, the allowance would be $11.
Mr. Chairman, total per year? Or what's the rest of the story?
Senator Fredrickson, that's correct, per year.
Okay. Mr. Chairman and Senator Fredrickson, I think underlying question is insufficient funds to make the program run. And I think that Senator Clark is here and maybe can address the vision and also, I think, the process in terms of how this might work.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Senator Clark, did you have a minute or so you wanted to offer the committee?
I would sure be delighted to.
I would remind members of the committee that we're going to finish a little bit after 11. We haven't started the economic development bill. So we're going to have a busy day tomorrow. Senator Clark?
I'll be happy to keep it brief. We actually have embarked on what's really very much a cutting-edge idea and concept that has been worked on bipartisanly and that we've been working on with the governor's office and with several of the agencies. So it's been a very different way of approaching things. What essentially we're trying to do is create a funding mechanism, a funding system, to help make sure we're closing the achievement gap in our K-12 public schools through making sure parents have the resources to purchase pre-kindergarten education for 3- and 4-year-olds. And I'm sure Senator Stumpf, and I apologize, I was someplace else, I'm not sure what all he got a chance to say, but the focus is on building on the existing infrastructure, helping raise the quality, making sure that parents have good quality choices, making sure that we get data back and assessment and results, but that we keep this as simple as possible. It's not a new program. So build off of what school districts are doing, what preschools are doing, what Head Start, what some child care is doing, and hoping that we can move forward to really close that gap while giving parents those choices. We're also working with the Minnesota Early Learning Foundation, who has been working with the Department of Human Services on the quality rating system, as well as they would do an evaluation of this. We have spent a fair amount of time working out logistical kinds of things because it's a mechanism. That's where the focus has really been, is how do we make sure that we make this as easy as possible for parents to be able to access good quality services and that providers would have a good reason to believe they're going to get the funds. So the state would be doing the reimbursement there. We have gotten very far along and I think have got a good agreement again with the administration about this, and we've come together in a bipartisan way. There has been some worries about what this is or isn't, but we believe that it really can help us make a really good step forward. Where we're at with the bill right now, because of where Senator Stumpf's target was, is making sure that we're dealing with our commitments to special education. And that has meant that there hasn't been a lot of money left there. But what's in the bill is the mechanism and the ability to help the departments get this ready. And the reason why there's the tiny bits of money in there is because we want to make sure that people are getting that we actually want to put dollars there, that this isn't just a figment of our imagination. But unless we find a way to do that along the way, and since the governor supports this, I'm thinking we're going to work hard to make sure at the end of the day we actually are able to do something. But we wanted to make sure there was at least the resources in there to get the administrative pieces going.
Okay, thank you, Senator Clark. Senator Stumpf, go ahead.
Okay, I think that if there are no questions on that division, we'll move on to Article 8. Article 8 is the prevention article, and that's quite simple, straightforward, just appropriations. Article 9 is the self-sufficiency and lifelong learning article. Language there from the department, and Section 2 is a recommendation, a governor's recommendation to increase the reimbursement for GED tests. Section 3 is there's no changes, but members might note that the appropriations in section or subdivision 2 reflect a 3% growth factor that was passed in 2005. That 3% growth factor is for the adult basic education, and we had lots of testimony in committee that that particular program has been growing by leaps and bounds, and to a large extent because of the increased need for programs for immigrants and in particular English learners. Then the appropriations in the rest of Article 9. Article 10 is the state agencies. There you'll see the language basically requesting that the commissioner would be the one to submit the report, Section 1. And in Section 4, you'll see the compensation, the 3.25 compensation language, and that is reflected in the appropriations. And then the appropriation section. Article 11 is the forecast adjustments, and Article 12 is the technical language from the revisor's office. And then, of course, I'd point out the repealer section. Those repealer sections reflect the changes that we have spelled out as we've gone through, either deleting obsolete language or deleting language that is not needed because of the reform in the levies, the consolidation of the levies, or the movement of the alternative compensation from general education to educational excellence. And any other things? Mr. Chairman, I think that's the language of the bill, and we do have some runs if members are so interested to reflect the contents of the proposal.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Let me ask. The new special ed figures.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Cohen, Article 11 carries the forecast adjustments as calculated under the February forecast with three exceptions: special education regular, excess cost, and transition disabled. We noted earlier are carried in Article 3, so they are not carried in the forecast article.
I had one particular question. If I could find the appropriation section.
Mr. Chairman, the language for subdivision 15,
there is a base fund, so this is just,
oh, okay.
This is not new.
This, Mr. Chairman, this is a base funded program. It is done.
Best practices.
Okay, this is a base funded program. And is it a grant program? And it's a grant program through the Department
of Education.
The Department of Education.
Pushing that button.
No, I understand it's a base-funded program. I'm wondering what the program does, who the grantee organization is, and how it compares to what's in public safety.
The granting organization is the Department of Education, and it's, I believe, the one with the Department of Public Safety. Obviously, there'd be the Department of Public Safety would be the granting organization.
Yeah, but who's there? No, it says there's a grantee organization.
Mr. Chairman, we'll find the information out on that.
Okay, if you could do that during the course of the meeting, we'd appreciate it. Questions for Senator Stumpf or Mr. Nauman on the bill of the appropriations? Senator Dill?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Stumpf, if I could ask you to turn to page 83. There's a section on page 83 that deals with the environmental remediation loan to Eden Valley Watkins system, and it's for the cleanup of a mercury spill. I want to thank you for putting this provision in here. In the last day or two, I think it was a couple of days ago, I got an email from the superintendent of schools, and he had a request to see if this could be extended a little bit so he had more time to, more than 4 years, to pay this loan back to cover the $126,000 that it cost to clean up this mercury. So I'm just wondering if you'd be willing to just to adjust the percent and the years here to some extent to allow some additional time.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dill, would be happy. I think that would be a provision that we could we'll visit with the superintendent, and I think the tax committee, which would be the next stop tomorrow, would be, I think, a good spot to do it in. And I'd be happy. I don't think there's any problem. In our initial visit with the superintendent, our understanding was that 4 years was fine, but you know, I don't see why there would be any problem in adjusting that.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, at this time I would like to offer the amendment numbered AO705-0546.
That's how we do.
I don't have copies. I just have two copies.
That's not how they do it.
Do we not have?
Doesn't make sense to me.
Okay. Apparently, we don't have copies of this particular amendment, which we'll make.
It's a very short
quickly.
One.
Quickly. Are there other amendments?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Betzel,
Mr. Chair,
questions?
I'd like, maybe we could revisit the issue that you raised on page 41. That's the parent and family involvement policy. This is a issue that could have a cost to the school districts, but we're not paying for it. It has no consequence for not doing it. So you pose the question, why is it in here? And I'm just wondering if it needs to be in here at all. It's if it's neither paid for nor going to cause any result if it isn't done. So I guess I'd move to strike section 24 then of this article.
I suppose.
Senator Betzel, I'd raise the question of the mandate, what might happen. I don't know if there's something less, if it becomes permissive language, like we fervently hope that a local school board would.
Mr. Chairman.
I don't know how to fix it, Mr. Chair.
Senator Pappas.
Well, my question is, what's a parent-teacher organization? What's the PTO or the PTA? I mean, isn't that what it's supposed to be, is involving parents in decisions? And some schools have site-based decision-making where the principal cooperates with the schools. I mean, did this come from some particular district where there was a problem? Senator Stumpf, do you remember who brought this to you?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pappas, yes, I do. This was Senator Wieger's provision, and I believe it passed out of his committee. So it was, again, it was added as an amendment.
Okay.
All the way through the bill?
Yeah.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Dill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, would it help if we looked at line 41.4? And at the end of that sentence, there's this word must. If we deleted must and put in the words encouraged to, is encouraged to, those three words, and there may be some other spots where we've got must where we could be adjust the language so it's a little more permissive.
Well, Senator Dill, that may or may not be a way around it, but it would take some reworking of the amendment. That would
right.
be. Senator Betzel, you've made the amendment.
Mr. Chair, and presumably Senator Wigger will be advised if this is removed, and he may have an opportunity to work on it and get it in shape before the floor. But right. I just don't know that.
We could ask him right now.
Yeah.
Mr. Wigger just.
Oh, is he here?
Senator Wigger, do you want to join us for a second? We've been kicking your name around, so.
That is so funny.
Nice timing.
Kicking, but.
Senator Wigger, let me just indicate the question. I raised it in questioning, and then Senator Betzel now has an amendment. Section 24 on page 41, which is the parent and family involvement policy. And the issue is, and maybe you can address it, it talks about a local school board must formally adopt and implement a parent and family involvement policy and so on. And there are several mandates placed on here. And I had raised the question of, in the event that a school board did not comply with the language, you arguably would open up that school board to litigation, in terms of the advisory committee. I think I asked Senator Stumpf, what's the compulsion or what would be the effect of that in terms of any enforcement mechanism? And he indicated there wasn't any. Senator Betzel has now raised the question of, in effect, an unfunded mandate. So that's where we are right now.
Mr. Chair, this is an initiative from the Minnesota Parent Teachers Association from Senator Erickson Ropes, was heard in Policy Committee as to the impact. This would be a directive to school districts to comply, and the consequence of not doing would probably be a reminder that it should be done. Is there precedent for doing this? We've already passed a bill in the full body that Senator Moi had on cyberbullying and directed school districts to have a policy on this issue. And there was testimony that, yes, this is a mandate, but we mentioned it was needed, and we occasionally put these items in. This was fully discussed in committee and would be something that school districts would be expected to do.
Well, sir, let me ask my particular question. I look at Section 6B of the bill, where it says the school board must convene an advisory committee composed of an equal number of resident parents. Advisory committee must represent the diversity of the district. Separate from a district must adopt a policy, which would be pretty easy for a school board to promulgate. In this instance, if an advisory committee does not have the equal number, my question was, would that open up the school district to being the subject of litigation by a group of disgruntled parents who feel that the advisory committee doesn't represent the diversity, et cetera? So that was my question. Senator Betzel's question is a little bit different, I think. But
well, Mr. Chair, I guess a school district is inherently open for litigation to the extent they don't comply with a state statute. I think the directive is clear and easy for compliance.
Senator
Betzel.
Chair, Senator Wigger, Senator Pappas had just raised a question a minute ago. Don't the parent-teacher organizations already accomplish a lot of what is discussed in this section?
Mr. Chair, Senator Betzel, yes, they do. And as I mentioned initially, this is the initiative of the Parent Teachers Association, their statewide group, which was formerly headed up by Senator Erickson Ropes. This was their request. Are there districts with policies? Yes, there are. Do all have them? Don't. It was the same issue, basically, that we talked, Mr. Chair, when we discussed cyberbullying, for the need for policies throughout the state. Do districts address it? Many of them do, but the policy discussion was that all should.
Mr. Chair, I'll renew my motion to delete this section then. Again, it's something that's apparently already done or could be done. It's a mandate that's not funded, and there's no consequence. I don't know. I don't think there's a need to have it in the bill.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, for the very same reasons, almost the very same reasons, I think we should keep it in. Because I think if the parent-teacher associations, which exist at, I think, almost all schools, I think it just kind of strengthens their hand in having a more cooperative relationship with the school district. And certainly you want a school that welcomes parents into the school and partners with parents in the education of their children. And it's better for the kids if parents are involved and integrated into that process. So I think we should keep it because I think this is something that schools do, and it just is going to help guide schools in doing a better job of it.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Anderson.
I'm agreeing with Senator Pappas that I just as soon keep the language in here because I think it will help parent-teacher groups get the accountability from the school boards that they're looking for. It's absolutely true that we pass a lot of unfunded mandates onto our school districts, and we need to be very, very cautious about that. But I don't really see just requiring them to have a policy. It's not in the same league as saying you have to do something in the classroom, you have to do something with children that really does take significant staff time and money. So I don't really see this as a big burden for schools.
Okay, and Senator Anderson, I'm not suggesting how I'm going to vote or not vote on the amendment. This isn't the adoption of a policy. This is a something that calls for action that has several levels to it.
Well, Mr. Chair, they have to adopt a policy. I just want to make sure I understand. Adopt a policy and convene a committee.
And there are parameters for the committee.
Right. It's an advisory committee. Mr. Chair, I don't see that as having... Okay. Significant cost.
Senator Betzold?
I'll renew my motion.
Okay, we have Senator Betzold's motion in front of us. Is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion fails. Senator Pariso?
Senator,
did you have an amendment or a question?
No, never mind.
Senator Pariso, I think we've got your amendment ready.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to offer at this time the AO70546 amendment.
No, it's not like he's just doing it. We shouldn't be messing.
And, Mr. Mayor, Chairman and members, it does two simple things. If you go on page 97 and 98, there are two sections which we would want to be reinstating of stricken language. On page 97, it's lines 21 through 27, and on page 98, it's 14 through 16. Yes, 14 through 16. And, Mr. Chairman, the reason for this is that this group...
Mr. Chair, could you repeat those those?
97 and 98. Your amendment shows.
The amendment shows.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes.
I have the amendment.
This is the 546 amendment.
546 amendment. Correct.
That's wrong.
Mr. Chairman, this says that after all, since we have an organization here that's established as a 501c3, private nonprofit group, but it's looking at the object of it in this bill is to carry out agency functions, and striking. The requirement for them to be subject to open meeting laws, I think, is inappropriate for some agency, a nonprofit, to be carrying out agency functions without the requirement of open public meetings. And so that's the reason for this amendment. So you've got the reinsertion of the stricken language on lines 97, 21 through 27, and 98, 14 through 16. And after all, we have a whole lot of groups around here that receive funds by grant from public sources at the state level and any other, even carried out through the counties, and they are required to have open meeting administrative rules applied to them. So this is certainly an oversight, I think, but I'd like to see it corrected. So I'd move that amendment.
Okay, we have Senator Pariso, Senator Frederickson.
Chairman, Senator Pariso, I'm a little confused about the intent of the amendment because the 501c3 nonprofit is also repealed in this on lines 9 through 20. Right. It's stricken.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. Senator, on where?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pariso, if you look at the bill on page 97, you referenced in your
This is reinstating the amendment reinstates the language that's stricken on those lines.
Chairman, Senator Parcell, I understand that, but the first part of that section is also stricken in the bill.
Yes.
Right, we have Senator Parcell's amendment in front of us.
Mr. Chairman, the reason that this other paragraph B, the starting of the large paragraph above it, is that that requires them to provide a grant. I mean, there's other language in there as well, but I think that the open meeting law is the important section there.
Yeah. Senator Frederickson.
Senator Parcell, I'm still a little confused. I certainly support reinstating open meeting law, but I don't think it would apply to the nonprofit section 501C because that also is being repealed.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Chairman,
could we just have some clarification as to what the intent is here?
Senator Clark?
Originally, you may recall that MELF was a public-private partnership, and it was getting money from the state. After some challenges with appointments to their board, the board decided to become a private entity. And so as a private entity, they get to decide what they're going to do and how they're going to do it and all of that. It actually is highly unusual to have a 501c3 be subject to the open meeting law. I've done a lot of work with nonprofits. Having said that, I understand, Senator Parcell, what you're trying to get at. And nobody is here from that organization right now, so I feel a little uncomfortable saying, let's do this. But what I'd like to do is work with you to try to figure out how we can accomplish your purpose without, frankly, tying their hands in a way that would be a little unusual.
Okay. Further discussion on Senator Parcell's amendment. Senator Parcell?
Mr. Chairman, I think it's a flaw in this, and I hate to see it go forward without being addressed.
Okay. We have
I'd like to vote yes on this bill.
All right. Well, we have, separate from the bill, let's deal with the amendment. We have Senator Pappas.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I just don't think the amendment makes sense with paragraph B being stricken because there's no board of directors to apply this to because it's no longer a public-private partnership from the explanation that Senator Clark gave us.
Senator Frederickson, it's not a public entity formally, either.
Hold on, let's...
To Senator Parcell or to whoever would know, is the Minnesota Early Learning Foundation, is that a 501c3? If it is, then Senator Parcell's amendment makes sense.
It's an agent.
Senator Parcell?
Mr. Chairman, I'm aware that 501c3s usually don't have this option, but they are carrying out agency things. If MELF gets this, they're carrying it out as if they were an arm of the agency. And all agencies are required to conduct open meeting law.
And Senator Frederickson's purposely. Question was, is this a 501c3?
It definitely is.
Yeah, Mr. Chair,
Senator
MELF
Clark.
Is a 501c3. The intent isn't that they would carry out agency functions. What they have offered in terms of levering private and public maximizing our public and private commitments out there is that part of what they're offering to do is to evaluate as a separate entity and paying for it with raising funds itself, the allowance or scholarship strategy. So that would be like the U or a private college or somebody else doing it. And again, I understand, I think what you're trying to get at, but it would be highly unusual. We have lots of nonprofits that do grant making that provide services, and none of their boards are subject to that. Again, I don't know that it's a fatal flaw if it goes forward. I just would feel much more comfortable if we could work with the Early Learning Foundation to try to accommodate what your concern is. But they are not here.
Mr. Chairman, I think that since we don't, you know, maybe they need to change their status to be conducting agency business.
But it's on me.
All right, we have Senator Frederickson.
Mr. Chairman, I would make one other note in support of Senator Parcell's amendment. This also would reinstate the authority of the legislative auditor to do an audit of the organization.
Okay, we have Senator Parcell's amendment in front of us. Is there further discussion?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pappas. Well, it includes a line 27, and I don't think that's her intention.
No, I'm sorry. I just drew my bracket that far. It doesn't include that. It includes the C. It changes the C.
Oh, I see.
It just changes the reference.
Oh, I got it. That's all it does. Okay.
It isn't the language on the line. It's just the C. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. We have the Parasol motion in front of us. Senator Murphy, did your hand up or just? Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. We have the Parasol motion in front of us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion fails.
Division, I'd like a show of hands, Mr. Chairman.
Division. All those in favor of the motion, raise your hand. And those opposed?
Five.
Yeah. See, I was right.
Good hearing.
Motion fails.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask the members on this committee to think about all the things they serve on, all the commissions and everything they serve on, and remind yourself how many of them are subject to open meeting law with boards.
All right, do we have further amendments to Senator Stump's bill? Senator Dill.
I have the A4 amendment.
I also don't know about them. We required a report.
Senator Dill, we've almost had it distributed. If you could explain the amendment, the A4 amendment.
Mr. Chair, members, I didn't have a chance to talk to Senator Stump about this ahead of time because it crossed my mind as I was sitting here. This is a bill that I had in process which never received a hearing. But the amendment itself is calling for $25,000 to be granted to the Libra Academy Sober School, which is located in Litchfield. It's in my Senate district. And I believe it's one of five sober schools in the state of Minnesota. The other four are in the metro area. This is in the rural area, and it's a school that is an alternative school for students that have an addiction to alcohol or drugs. So they can go to this school and be in an environment where they're not in a peer group, where they're encouraged to get back into the habit of using these drugs and alcohol and so forth. This school started up 2 or 3 years ago, and it's struggling. They've been trying to get charter school status, but they kind of have to get above that 25-student level to qualify. They've been running about 12 to 20 students at a time in the school system, and they're basically short of money. Now, the Meeker County Board of Commissioners has donated money to this school in the past, and I don't have this in the amendment, but my understanding is they're willing to match this grant of $25,000 with another $25,000 to try to get them over the hump here in this school year. And the future looks better because there's a dormitory being built in Litchfield right now to house 20 students that are having drug addiction and alcohol problems. And those 20 students will be going to this Libra Academy. But in the meantime, there are about, as I understand it, they're about $60,000 short for this to get through this school year. And if they had a charter school status, they would be getting some rent subsidy and some other assistance to help make ends meet. But basically, I'm asking for $25,000. And if it would be helpful, I would like to tag on the words that this grant must be matched with a $25,000 grant from the Meeker County Board of Commissioners.
Senator Stumpf.
Mr. Chairman, and maybe Senator Dill could, I don't know, are you finished with your amendment? Or?
Well, the only other thing I'd like to do is clarify that it's for the Libra Academy Sober School in Litchfield. So I would like to adjust the amendment to include that as well. And I'm sorry I didn't have a chance to talk to you about this ahead of time. I had the bill in process, but I think I had a hearing request in, but I never got to that point.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dill, I think it was a late introduction. I guess the one question I would have is what do you mean by unreimbursed educational costs? But the other thing is that I think where you have it, this will be a reduction to the Department of Education. And maybe that's what you intended, but.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Stump, if there's some other alternative place to scare up 25,000, I'd be interested in hearing about it, but that was just an idea.
Okay, Senator Stump.
And maybe.
Senator Dale.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stump, maybe we need more time for you to check in on this, make sure that I'm on the right track here, but. So that, you know, it's hard to maybe make a decision based on what I'm telling you. I can provide some documentation, some budgets, some formal requests, some other. I've got a folder on all this stuff back at my office.
Okay, well, we have the Dill amendment in front of us at this time, Senator Stumpf.
Mr. Chairman, maybe I can work with Senator Dill. I at this point, the way the amendment is structured, it reduces the Department of Education's budget by that amount. So maybe we can work together before, as we move ahead, we got a couple more stops.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I'll withdraw the amendment.
Okay, all right. Further amendments?
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Metzen.
I don't have an amendment, but there's a lot of language starting on page 26 that deals with the IB baccalaureate program, and I'm not so sure what it all means, but I'm not going to try to amend this bill today because of the money situation, but special district number 6, which is South St. Paul, has had an extremely successful baccalaureate in the senior high school area, and they had a little bill in for a pilot program, and I think we need some of these for all grades. And again, I repeat that South St. Paul has gotten awards for the high three classes, and we thought maybe it's time to have a program that is one or two maybe in the state that shows that this thing really works. And 2 years ago, we got this little money here to the dance floor, and about 2:30 in the morning, the money came out. Senator Marco had the bill at that time, and Senator Seaman has it this time. This is more of an awareness thing, but I think if you want to test this kind of a thing, K-12, we got to look at it somewhere. And I mean, there's tons of language in here, but I don't know what the hell it means. But I think what we do need is a program to look at it and go forward with an example, which would be the bill that Senator Seaman introduced. But apparently there's no money, and I'm not going to at this time take it away from another program. But I think I just wanted to visit with the committee at least that we've got to look at one of these or a couple of them that for all the grades, not just the schools that have it in the high grades. And this thing works. But anyway, that's my sermon for the morning. But it's a wonderful program, and in the higher grades, and it should be expanded to look at it later on for lots of schools.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I could just make a couple comments, just a little bit from what Senator Metzen is saying. One of the governor's programs is to provide scholarship money to students who take rigorous courses like IB courses, but they're not available statewide. They're not available all over the state. So there's a real flaw there in trying to get students to take more of these difficult courses, challenging courses, so they're better prepared for college when they're not even available from all schools. I just wanted to say that that Senator Stump, I'm just very, very disappointed with this legislation. I think you solve an important problem of special ed, but that many other needs in the educational area in the state are neglected or ignored. I mean, there's no money here on the formula. There's no early childhood money. There's no increases for adult basic education or English language learners. You're doing a little bit on Chinese, but what about all the other world languages? In the past, we've had a language in the bill. We're trying to move toward a requirement where all students take world languages. That's not in here. And then even the charter issue, I think that putting a cap on charter schools may be something that we have to do, but I think there's a real problem with not doing the startup aid. It's my understanding it's going to cost us, and they won't be able to get the federal startup aid either. So I think that we need to be looking at those things down the road, Senator Stump, and hopefully we can do better by the end of the session, because I just don't think this is doing our schools justice. It's not going to move us forward. It's not going to deal with the achievement gap. And our schools just have far more needs than solving the special ed problem, as important as that is.
Mr. Chairman, and maybe just a comment. About 2.5 weeks ago, I stopped adding up the requests that our committee received, and I was up to $2.1 billion in requests. And I realize that $498 million is a lot of money, but it, when you come to address the needs of our schools across the state and not only of our existing infrastructure, but what we're trying to do in terms of creating greater opportunities and addressing problems and improving our society, it's far too little. The 498 is not adequate, and I would agree with that.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Mossman.
Mr. Chair, members, if you choose to consider a technical amendment, just to point out that on page 107 of the bill and page 118 of the bill, excuse me, there's some duplicative appropriation language related to fixing a 2007 forecast-related appropriation for the adult basic education program to put the appropriation at the levels that reflected the entitlement that had been previously passed into law. If you wish to consider it, I would suggest that you could to eliminate that duplication on page 107 of the bill, delete lines 107.22 and line 22 and line 25.
Senator Stumpf.
Mr. Chairman, I would agree.
Make that motion.
I'd move that.
Senator Fredrickson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stumpf, as long as we're making one technical amendment, would you include in your motion on page 43, line 3, delete such and insert the?
Mr. Chairman, knowing Senator Fredrickson, I would agree with that.
Okay, we have the Stumpf Fredrickson motion in front of us. Mr. Nauman?
Senator Fredrickson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stumpf, page 43, line 3. Delete such and insert the word the.
Fredrickson amendment.
How did you find that?
We talked about that.
It's right here.
There's a word search.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that amendment as amended.
I can't even see it.
Okay, we have Senator Stump's motion then. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Further discussion or amendments? Senator Stumpf?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know if the committee wants to indulge in more paper, but we have a lot more paper that we can afford you on the floor if you would like to. I know your time is precious.
Do it later.
Mr. Chairman, if there are no other amendments, I would move that. This hasn't been
here. It is in Senate file 20.
Oh, XXXX.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move that Senate File 2095, as amended, be recommended to be passed and referred to the Committee on Taxes.
Okay. Thank you for the motion. I should point out to members both that Senator Stumpf, along with his staff, came to the committee with this complex bill, and I think we had the small technical amendment from Mr. Mossman and from Senator Fredrickson on language, but otherwise there were no delete everything amendments or anything like that. So. Obviously, a great job. So we have Senator Stumpf's motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Senator Stumpf.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and committee members.
Okay. Members, here's Senator Tomasoni. As he's coming to the table, we're going to start discussion of Senator Tomasoni's bill and maybe have the explanation of the bill. If people who came for Senator Stumpf's bill are leaving, please don't talk until you leave the room. Again, that was don't talk. So we can get going with Senator Stumpf, or Senator Tomasoni.
We obviously are not going to get very far with this bill. We will not have amendments today, and we'll pick it up tomorrow morning. Members, we're going to meet at 8:30 tomorrow morning. We'll have Senator Tomasoni's bill to finish, and then we'll have, I think, four other bills, which I don't think will be lengthy bills. Well, possibly we'll have the smoking bill tomorrow, and then three other bills, including the deficiency bill, bill of Senator Berglund's, bill of Senator Betzold's, and then we'll pick up things with Senator Tomasoni's bill tomorrow. So, Senator Tomasoni, why don't you begin a discussion of the bill and see if we can just maybe have your overview, and then we'll pick it up tomorrow. Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. Chairman, I just so you know, I kind of like your calculator on this particular bill. So my one-time bill is hang on, I'm getting a readout that I thought I had with me, and for some reason it disappeared. But Mr. Chairman, this bill is been put together within the target that you have given us. It's the economic development bill. We've had 127 bills referred to the committee. We've had time to hear about 86 of them. There have been requests for about $700 some million in spending in this bill, and we had a one-time bill that went out of the committee with about $239 million. This particular bill does not have the one-time spending in it because there's another bill for that particular thing. The bill itself has general fund appropriations for 2008 and 2009 of $327,953,000, workforce development money of $20,486,000, a remediation account of $1.4 million, petroleum tank cleanup of $2.168 million, and workers' compensation money of $46,612,000 for a total sum of $398,619. The purview of this particular committee has about 3,000 jobs under it, and because of the way money is collected in some of these agencies, there's actually about $3 billion that is spent through this agency that's up and above general fund money because of the fee schedules and the various collections that some of the departments make. What I'll do, Mr. Chairman, how technical do you want this explanation to be? Because I'll turn this over to Mr. Jensen, and he can run through the bill. Do you want to go through each page, or do you want
to? Well, that's up to your discretion, Senator Tomasoni.
I think the best way to do this then is to let Mr. Jensen go ahead and describe the bill.
Mr. Chairman, members, I'm Dave Jensen, a fiscal analyst in the Senate. The summary that Senator Tomasoni presented was interesting. This is the first time in about 5 years that we haven't come before this division in cutting the budgets. So there was a little bit of spending, actually, in this bill. The bill and the spreadsheets match up pretty well, so I'll just start with the bill and go through on page two and start with some of the increases that are in this bill. On page two, on line 31, the Rural Policy and Development Center at St. Peter, they increased the base there by $100,000 each year. And on page three, line 18, you'll see the Economic Development Association for the Metropolitan Area. That's their base numbers. Line 24, we were able to increase the Women Ventures Fund by $100,000 each year. The Small Business Innovation Research Program, that's their base there of $100,000. They also have to come back with a recommended fee schedule to the legislature on page 4, line 8. Page 4, line 13, we've increased the Minnesota Inventors Congress from 60,000 base to 85,000. on line 17 through 20 is a governor's recommendation for the small community wastewater treatment program. Lines 27 through 34, that's the base for the Job Skills Partnership Program. Page 5 at the top, the Twin City Rise Program, they've increased that from $300,000 a year to $455,000 per year. The next line there is for the Opportunities Industrialization Centers. The $500,000 from the general fund is an increase for each year. This gets them back almost to where their base was in the 2003 session. Starting on line 12 through 22, an increase of $100,000 each year for the LifeTrack resources dealing with immigrant and refugee programs, job skills, and on-the-site job coaching. Line 23 through 29 is the Northern Connections. It's a pilot project that got started in the 06 legislative session, and this continues their base and adds about $50,000 to that. Line 30 through 34 is another training program that goes through the Workforce Development Center, and this continues their base. Mr. Chairman, on page 6, line 3, this is money from the general fund for the Minnesota Youth Program. In previous years, we've had to take it out of the Workforce Development Fund instead of cutting out the program entirely. And the Minnesota Youth Program is the one that goes to all the counties, and they have to qualify based on their number of population from 14 to 21, and also the number of disadvantaged youth in the county. On page 6, line 25 is continuation of the 06 appropriation for the summer youth employment in Minneapolis. On page 7, starting with line 4, this is a new appropriation. It's for the City of St. Paul for their summer youth employment program. Line 14 through 25 continues the Boys and Girls Club program, but there is an increase of $500,000 each year. Line 26 is the program for extended employment for services for persons with severe disabilities. That's their base number. On line 34 of page 7, this is a $1 million each year increase for the CILS program, which is the Centers for Independent Living. On page 8, line 5, there's direction to the Commissioner of Deed to try to determine how we can get federal reimbursement for the CILS programs. On line 26 to 27, that's money to Rise Incorporated, which is the employment center for people who are deaf or hard of hearing. Line 30 is a new program for interpreters for people who are hard of hearing and trying to get them into the workforce. Page 9, we have more funding for the employment support services for persons with mental illness, $1,000,004, that's their base number. Lines 12 through 14 is the state services for the blind office. And again, on page 9, line 15, that's for the state's vocational rehabilitation program. And 21 through 26 is the Advocating Change Together. It's their base program. Mr. Chairman, on page 9, line 28, the $150,000 is new money, but that's the governor's recommendation. And lines 32 on page 9 through line 8 on page 10 is standard language that's been in the bill for a number of years. Mr. Chairman, on page 10, line 9 is explore Minnesota tourism. This match program began in fiscal year 2007. And in this recommendation, there's another $1 million added to their base for each year. Mr. Chairman, on page 11, line 15 is the Minnesota Film TV Board. The 325 is a $75,000 increase to their base. In previous years, in fiscal year 03, they had $329,000 in their base. So this gets them back close to where they were. Line 22 to 26, the $500,000 restores the base to the Minnesota snow bait program. This was reduced because of the budget cuts. Mr. Chairman, on page 11, line 27 is the Commerce Department. It's much smaller than usual because the energy and telecommunications part is in Senator Anderson's bill, as well as the telephone access to Minnesota is in the energy and environment bill. Top of page 11, we followed the governor's recommendations for, like, the financial examinations. The dollars include some increases for mortgage industry review and senior citizens protection and fraud investigation. Those would be the governor's numbers. And, Mr. Chairman, we've added 3.25% to all of the general fund money and also the other fund monies. Mr. Chairman, for page 12, total for the Housing Finance Agency, on line 25 is the challenge program. There's some new language there. What this does is implement the need for the public housing preservation. We have money in the one-time bill for this. On page 13, lines 10 through 18, these have been separate appropriations for a number of years for the urban Indians and the tribal Indian program. In the 05 session, these were all merged with the challenge program. But at the request of the Indian housing officials, we've separated the dollar amounts out again. On page 13, line 18, the Housing Trust Fund, there's a base increase of $250,000 there each year. The rental assistance for mentally ill, there's an increase there of $1 million each year for their housing needs. On line 30, the family homeless prevention, we almost double the amount of money to be added. $3,750,000 each year for that program. On page 14, line 11, those home ownership assistance fund is the base, and the affordable rental investment fund on line 12 is the base numbers that the governor had proposed. On page 15, line 17, there's an increase there of $315,000 each year, and that restores the base from about the fiscal year 03. On line 23, there's a small increase there for the home ownership education, counseling, and training of $95,000 each year. And there's also an increase on the capacity billing grants on line 28. Of $90,000 each year. Mr. Chairman, labor and industry starts on page 15. And on page 16, line 14, the 200,000, that's an increase from 150,000 each year for the Vineland Center, basically for a rehabilitation program for veterans. Mr. Chairman, on line 21 is the appropriation for the safety codes and services. In this program is the code consolidation fund, and we'll get to the language starting back on page 59, but this results from the governor's executive order to consolidate the building trades within one department, which would be labor and industry. Also, we've included the governor's recommendation. He had some increases from the workers' comp fund to meet OSHA staffing levels that were required by the federal government. On line 24, labor standards and apprenticeship, there's an increase in there for the governor's recommendation for labor law regulation. The Senate is adding additional money for labor law enforcement, basically the prevailing wage enforcement. Lines 29 to 34 are base numbers. Again, those were increased for the Workforce Development Fund for the salary adjustments. On page 17, line 3 is just the general support for the agency, and that also has the increase for the salary adjustment. On line 6, the Bureau of Mediation Services, that's their base with the salary adjustments. On page 17, line 15, there was a $50,000 per year increase for the labor management committees. On page 17, line 23, there's the base number for the Workers' Compensation Court of Appeals. On line 27 for the Minnesota Historical Society, starting on line 30, you can see some appropriations for their operations and maintenance. The building is now 15 years old, and they need additional maintenance, which is provided for by the Department of Administration through their revolving fund. On page 18, you'll see lines 4, 5 is base numbers. And on 6 is the pass-through money that goes out to some of the international centers, the Guard Museum. The one increase in here is on line 9, the Minnesota Military Museum. Their base of $67,000 was doubled to $134,000. And the rest of the language is been in the bills for a number of years for the Historical Society. Page 18, line 23, the Board of the Arts. This is where there was an increase in this amount from the governor's rec. It increased about $500,000 each year. The recommendation here is to add another $1,500,000 each year. So a total of about $4 million was added to the Board of Arts. Seems like a large number, but in 2003, they had $26 million for the biennium. And even with these new numbers, they're only about $21 million. So they're still more than 20% down from the 2003 fiscal year. And the increases were made in proportion to the way the operations and grants and regional arts councils had gotten their money.
And, Mr. Jensen, as long as you mentioned that, in 2001, when we had the surplus monies, there was no increase made to that budget.
Mr. Chairman, on page 19, there's the grants, programs, and arts council. The breakdown is about 7% operations and support, about 65% is grants, and about 28% goes out to the regional arts councils. In Section 12 there on line 3 is the Board of Architecture, Engineer, Land Surveying, Architectural, Geoscience, and Interior Design. Their base number plus the salary adjustment. The same for the Board of Accounting, the Board of Barbers and Cosmetologist Examiners. There's an increase there. They wanted two positions for their enforcement statewide. They now have inspectors that go out and check the barbershops, et cetera, but they didn't have anybody to do the enforcement, so that was added at their request. And line 10 is the Boxing Commission, $50,000. This was the governor's recommendation. We've also put that in the budget tails for fiscal year 10 and 11. Mr. Chairman, on page 19, line 12 is the transfers. We talked about the code consolidation, but we wanted to make the state general fund at the fund balance come out even, so we transferred an additional amount of money from the new construction code to the general fund. And line 17 is a transfer from the meth lab cleanup revolving loan fund, which has a balance. We're just transferring within a department to the community wastewater treatment account to solve some of the small city problems. Mr. Chairman, if there's no questions, I'll go on to the language.
Well, I think at this point we've run over. I know we have at least some of us have a caucus that's begun. So what I'd like to do is let's start with the language first thing in the morning, and then we'll go to amendments, and hopefully we'll get through our agenda tomorrow. So I apologize to everybody who's come here for the bill, but it took more time to go through K-12 than I thought it might. So,
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Frederickson.
Do we have a meeting tonight also?
No, that's not the plan.
Oh, good.
Some of us had that on our schedule, that's why.
Session, I assume, will go for a while today, so no, there will not be a meeting tonight. But let's see if we can get through our agenda tomorrow morning, hopefully by 11:15. So we'll adjourn now, and Senator Thomasoni, if that's okay, pick it up tomorrow.
No, but that's what you want, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Thanks.